Everyone has heard the statement that 100 companies are responsible for 71% of global emissions, that corporations emit the carbon and governments should regulate the carbon away. They should fix the problem by delivering clean electricity instead of burning fossil fuels or by running our pickup trucks on electricity. The latest is to put hydrogen in our furnaces instead of gas, so that we can all keep living the way we do until we have to maybe start thinking about this in 2030. The problem with this is that those 100 companies don't directly produce much CO2. They sell fossil fuels that are burned for energy, which releases CO2. It's their customers, you and me, who turn their product into emissions. We buy what they are selling, directly or indirectly, whether out of choice or out of necessity. Most of the world's nations signed on to the Paris Agreement, promising to reduce their carbon emissions, but so far, nobody has done very much. It's hard when you have economies based on digging up fossil fuels and then manufacturing stuff that runs on them, emitting carbon at every step of the way. It's harder when everyone wants more stuff, and the jobs all depend on us buying it. So the only strategy anyone can think of is to produce more carbon-efficient stuff, to build electric cars instead of gasoline-powered, to burn natural gas instead of coal, to make more wind turbines and solar panels, and to dream of nuclear reactors, carbon capture and storage, and hydrogen. This was actually working, to a degree, pre-pandemic. The rate of increase in carbon emissions was slightly less than the growth of the world's economies. But even with all that greening going on, carbon emissions were still increasing by 1.3% on average, while the global economy expanded by about 3%. And in 2019, global greenhouse gas emissions from all sources still reached a record high of 52.4 gigatons of CO2e. The E stands for equivalents, other gases like methane or fluorocarbon refrigerants, some of which have many thousands of times the global warming potential of CO2. When the economy booms, so do emissions. The world loves growth, and nobody wants to see an economic seizure like we had during the pandemic happen again. Governments have been pouring vast sums into cranking up the economic engines, encouraging us to buy more stuff and more services, while almost completely ignoring the fact that to keep under a temperature rise of 1.5 degrees, we have to reduce our carbon emissions budget to 25 gigatons of CO2e by 2030, less than half of what we emitted in 2019. Norman Mailer wrote, "There was that law of life, so cruel and so just, that one must grow or else pay more for remaining the same." Growth is the law of life, and the engine of growth runs on fossil fuels. If we have any chance of getting close to the carbon budget for 2030, we have to change the way we think about growth. We have to stop thinking about production, the making of what everyone is selling, and start thinking about consumption, what we are buying. We have to stop thinking about efficiency, making something slightly better, and start thinking about sufficiency. What do we really need? The premise of this book, and the research it is based on, is that we are all collectively responsible for reducing our carbon emissions to keep under that 1.5 degree ceiling. We have that carbon budget set in Paris, and if you divide it by the number of people on Earth, we have a personal carbon allocation or budget target of lifestyle emissions, those emissions that we can control, of about 2.5 tons per person per year by 2030. Getting by on this is what we are calling the 1.5 degree lifestyle. But what is living on 2.5 tons of carbon actually like? How do you measure it? How much does individual consumption matter? These are some of the questions that this book will try to answer. We will try and look at the carbon cost of everything that we do in our lives to help people make choices about what makes sense, what's worth trying to change, and what isn't. It's a model that not only can influence our personal lives, but also can guide policy, from urban planning to agriculture.